But whereas his fellow guardsmen's feet might ache, Merlin Athrawus's artificial sinews never felt fatigue unless he chose to feel it. And whereas those same fellow guardsmen might occasionally think of something else they could be doing with that same time, Merlin was actually grateful for the sometimes endless periods he spent standing outside a chamber door or against the wall behind Caleb's chair or throne. There was never enough time for him to adequately review the take from the literally hundreds of remote sensors his snarks had deployed, after all. To be gifted with large chunks of time when he could simply stand in one place and review the intelligence tidbits Owl had flagged for human, or at least Merlin's, evaluation was welcome. The fact that Nimue had always been capable of multitasking, and that Merlin could do the same, meant he could engage in that review while simultaneously keeping an eye on Caleb. It wasn't something he'd even be tempted to do under other circumstances, but as only one member of a 4 or 5-man security detail inside Telesburg Palace, he was willing to take the chance of operating at a few percentage points less than his full capability while he studied the transmissions from Owl. Especially when that full capability included many times human strength, enhanced hearing, and the sort of reaction speed possible for someone whose nervous impulses moved 100 times faster than those of any organic human. At the moment, given the dense, glittering crowd which filled the grand ballroom to capacity, reviewing sensor reports was the last thing on his mind. He didn't really anticipate any desperate attack upon Caleb or Charlion, but the sheer number of people packed together could provide highly effective cover for an assassin with a knife, as the attempt on Archbishop Michael had made only too clear. It wouldn't necessarily have to be some suicidal fanatic from the Temple Loyalists in this case either. The size of the crowd itself could provide plenty of cover for any assassin cool enough to blend back into it once he'd struck the fatal blow. "You know," Merlin told himself rather severely, "you do have a tendency to look on the dark side of these festive occasions, don't you?" There was an undeniable edge of truth to the self-question. During Nimue's lifetime, evenings like this had possessed an almost frenetic aura. Everyone attending them had known the Gababa were out there, and that humanity was losing. That every formal ball they attended was one of a dwindling number of balls any human being would ever attend again. It had, to say the least, put a damper on the festivities. It had for Nimue, at least. Or perhaps it was only that she'd been sufficiently sensitive to the moods of others that the crowds around her had caused her to feel that sense of depressing mortality. Merlin sometimes thought that must have been the case, given Nimue's preference for solo forms of entertainment. Sailing, for example. Rock climbing, hang gliding, hikes. Reading or splashing paint on a canvas. It was as if she'd been spending the limited number of years available to her soaking up the natural universe through her very pores. There was actually a faint ghost of some of those currents of Gababa-spawned tension in Karras these days. Even the most ardent of Caleb's supporters had to feel the occasional moment of dread when he or she contemplated the odds against Karras's survival. Adding Chisholm and Emerald to the newborn Carisian Empire had obviously helped, but given the fact that at least 80% of the human race lived on one of the mainland continents, under the direct control of the Church of God awaiting, doubling the Carisian population hadn't really shifted the overall odds very far. Tonight, however, no one seemed to be thinking gloomy thoughts. The ballroom's polished floor of black marble, inlaid with the kraken motif of the Kingdom of Karras's coat of arms in a warm, honey-gold marble from the Lizard Range in the Duchy of Armagh, gleamed in the light of the chandelier's countless flames. The marble was like a pool of deep, dark water, its surface mirroring the dancers upon it, and those dancers glittered and gleamed with their own finery in the same light, touched with the red, blue, and golden fire of rubies, sapphires, and topaz. Gold and silver chains, bullion embroidery, rustling cotton silk, and the even more expensive steel thistle silk